Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA journalist and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bon. Hope everyone is doing very well and you had a nice weekend, enjoyed UFC London, not the greatest card in the world, but a very significant main event result with Sean Brady going out there, becoming the first to ever finish Leon Rocky Edwards in MMA competition, gets the fourth round submission, really shakes up this welterweight division, which is quickly becoming one of the most intriguing in the UFC right now. Perfect timing in advance of the UFC 315 title fight between Bilal Muhammad and Jack Della Maddalena coming up in May. Looking forward to that one in Montreal. But yeah, welterweight, definitely a huge talking point for the UFC. At this moment, Sean Brady does what he needs to do. Huge moment for his career to go in there in enemy territory. An interesting time for the sport right now. Obviously, a very big time stretch of events with the UFC going on right now. We're in the thick of it. But as I kind of looking ahead on the schedule, what's become very clear to me is we are 3 months away from UFC 317 International Fight Week, the 14th annual UFC International Fight Week. No main event announced as of right now. And we're going to try to figure out why that is and what could potentially headline what is considered maybe the cornerstone event of the UFC schedule coming up on June 28th in Las Vegas, UFC 317. Joining me to offer some main event suggestions for that card will be none other than UFC analyst, UFC welterweight, the Ultimate Fighter 15 winner, Michael Maverick Chiesa. He is going to be here and we are going to go over what fights from the realistic to the wacky could potentially headline UFC 317. Before we get into that, I will tell you some of the fights that have been the main events of International Fight Week over the past 9 years or so. It is not the most spectacular list, honestly. We think of this fight card as being such a massive moment for the UFC's yearly schedule, but for one reason or another, it is not being allowed to put their best foot forward, whether it's injuries or fight withdrawals or any number of other circumstances. These are some recent International Fight Week main events. UFC 303 2024. That was Alex Pereira versus Yuri Prochazka. We all remember that came together on short notice after Conor McGregor pulled out with a toe injury in 2023 at UFC 290. It was Alexander Volkanovski versus Yair Rodriguez for a title unification bout. At the time, Rodriguez was interim champion. In 2022 at UFC 276, Israel Adesanya against Jared Cannonier, not a great fight. 2021, and this was probably the last really truly moving International Fight Week main event that had all eyes on the sport of mixed martial arts at UFC 264, the trilogy fight between Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor. The fight didn't play out exactly as everyone was hoping, but what a build to that fight. It was massive, massive stuff. One of the biggest pay-per-views in UFC history, especially in the past half decade or so. In 2020, didn't get a true International Fight Week because of COVID, but UFC 251, I guess, represents it in theory with Jorge Masvidal challenging Kamaru Usman for the welterweight title on very, very short notice. 2019, John Jones versus Thiago Santos headlines UFC 239. 2018, Stipe Miocic versus Daniel Cormier won the first fight in their trilogy. Cormier, moving up as the light heavyweight champion, knocks out Miocic at UFC 226. In 2017, Yoel Romero versus Robert Whittaker. That ends up being the main event, I believe, on fight day after, I think it was Amanda Nunes and Valentina Shevchenko fell apart. So that was not the original main event. And then 2016, another non-original main event at UFC 200. We get Miesha Tate versus Amanda Nunes. Cannot forget what happened that weekend. John Jones pulled out of the headliner with Daniel Cormier on 2 days' notice. So that is the past 9 years of International Fight Week main events going back to 2016. So not the biggest fights in the world. There's a couple big ones in there. Can we come up with something bigger to take it over the top this year? Michael and I will discuss all that. We brought our list. We are prepared for this conversation. We'll take a quick break and be right back with our International Fight Week main event suggestions with Michael Chiesa. We are back here on the Bonfire with a returning guest of the show. It is Mr. Maverick, Michael Chiesa. What's up, man? How are you?
What's going on, Mike? Good to be chatting with you.
Yeah, man. It's all good. I know you've been kind of busy of late. You were out in Vegas for a few weeks doing like the tough stuff. When did that wrap up?
We got done with the Ultimate Fighter, not last Wednesday. The Wednesday before was the last round of fights. And then I stayed through the weekend to work the desk. But it was a pretty crazy, hectic, like 5 weeks where it was like desk show. And then I had to go to Seattle. And then I had the weekend off. And then I got called on short notice for Fight Pass Invitational. Then I had another desk show. And it was just like in the midst of the Ultimate Fighter. And it was pretty chaotic, but I love living in the chaos, man. I wouldn't have it any other way. So it was a good time.
Yeah, and I know you can't say like too much about the show and all that. We know the deal there, but I guess like the experience from being on it to a coach, like how different was it? How enjoyable was it?
I enjoyed it a lot. I mean, first and foremost, I've been a huge Daniel Cormier fan since I was in high school. So it was surreal to have him, you know, bring me out to be a part of his coaching staff, to get to be around guys like Bob Cook, Ro Sanchez, Thiago Beowulf, Julius Casper, also known as, or Julius Creed, also known as Jacob Casper. I always mix the two up. Just his great coaching staff. I mean, this is the same staff that produced so many world champions and played a key role in DC's career. And, you know, I'm learning from them as I'm their coach and the guy. So it was really cool to be on the other side of things. Just because more than anything, I just know what the mental process is like going through that tournament. And even though the season was a lot shorter, you know, they don't stretch it out over 6 to 8 weeks anymore. It's a lot more, it's a lot more compact. And but at some point these guys hit a breaking point and you could kind of sense when it was coming. So that's when I felt like I had the most input, was just more things revolving around the tournament. But being around DC staff was awesome, man. It's a cool group of guys.
Yeah, when you see those dudes kind of hit that breaking point, do you look at them with like a little bit of a side eye and be like, bro, I did this two times as long, like stop complaining, this isn't that bad?
That was like the big joke the whole season. They kept giving me shit because, like, look, sometimes I tend to repeat myself. I think all fighters do for obvious reasons. And they're like, ooh, we get it. You won the only 12-week season. I'm like, but I didn't really give them a side eye because at the end of the day, it's all very relative. You know, yeah, my season was a lot longer, but either way, that mental breaking point is going to hit the same, whether it's over a longer amount of time or not. And you can just, you can sense it, especially for myself, being that I've been in that tournament, I could sense it. And that's when I felt like I could apply my input the most. But from an X's and O's standpoint, to just sit back and listen to Bob Cook and Daniel Cormier, it was pretty special, man. I asked Bob one day, you know, I'm like, how many world champions have you coached? And he sat there and it's just like,
Insane.
I think he got up to like 15 or 17 off the top of his head. And to sit, I mean, if there was a Hall of Fame for coaches, that's a first ballot Hall of Famer. So to sit behind him, watch him coach, see his approach to the sport, took in a lot of input from him for sure.
Yeah. And I know like people have their feelings about the Ultimate Fighter here in 2025. I know like who knows how it'll come out after production and everything, but being there, I don't know. What do you think? Is this going to be a good season, turn out to be some good television and stuff?
It's hard to say because I wasn't there for like a lot of the drama, you know, like a lot of that stuff kind of goes on inside the house. Mm-hmm. But I will say this, on both teams, the entire cast, all 16 fighters, there's really no characters. And that's like, if you want good TV, you want characters. If you want good fights, you pick fighters. So they're really, from what I saw, there was no characters. It was all guys that were there for one reason. That was to get in the UFC, to win the Ultimate Fighter. The fights are incredible. I mean, there is even, I can't say anything. All I can say is the fights were really, really good. Like I can't say which ones went the distance, if there's submissions, if there's knockouts. Sure. All I can say is like, if the TV isn't good, to each their own, you know, that's just depends on your taste. Depends on what you like when you watch reality television. If the reality TV aspect doesn't suit your needs, I promise you the fights will. The fights are going to deliver. They were incredible. These guys really laid it on the line. And I think that once we get to the finals, there's going to be two really, really good fights that have the potential to be some very, very special ones in the history of the Ultimate Fighter.
Dope. Yeah. Finals
are going to be crazy. That's all I got to say. Finals are going to be
crazy. Well, I'm looking forward to it now. I mean, I have like some people who follow the prospect side of the sport much more closely than I have the time to, and they keep saying this is like the best cast in seasons. So that's a good sign going forward. And what you said there, that makes me more excited. I guess last thing on that experience, like they did the media day at the very beginning, right, with Chael and DC, and I'm sure you saw the clips. They were saying like, we're not fighting. We want our assistant coaches to fight. Colby did some interviews like I think a week or two ago talking about you a little bit. bit. What do you think? Like, did anything building towards that come out of the show? Is that just like a write-off in your mind, or did the situation maybe create that possible fight you've been calling for a long time?
You know, it's hard to say. That it's like Colby kind of keeps to himself. You know, it would be hard to be at a, you know, if it's a 0 out of 10 in terms of the chaos side of Colby Covington, it's hard to be at a 10 all the time. So, sure. There was some interactions, a lot of them off camera. But you know, I'm sure they interviewed him and asked him his opinion about me. They did the same for me. And that's all I can say. I don't know what's going to come of it. You know, I've expressed interest in fighting Colby for years. And I know it's a tough fight. It's a really, really hard fight. Honestly, stylistically, it's a very tough matchup for me, but, there's always been this weird history between him and I that he didn't even know about, but his, my high school wrestling coach was his college coach's brother. And so once Colby and I got in the UFC, you know, Dusty, my coach, would just be like, I think my guy would whoop your guy's ass, you know? And so then like, that's when it kind of started brewing in my mind. And this was before Colby became Colby Chaos Covington. This was when he was a lot more, I'd say, humble, you know, just, he didn't really speak as much. He wasn't really this outgoing guy yet. So he was always in my mind. It's just at that time I was at 55 and then I got to 70. And obviously once you start winning fights, you're calling for the bigger ones to get, make your way up the ladder. And, that's a fight I would always take. If it was ever offered to me, I'm going to say yes at the drop of a hat. So we'll see what happens. I don't have a fight scheduled yet. Mm-hmm. I know I need to have a conversation with Sean and the team about what the plan is, what we're going to do. But yeah, I'm interested to see how this – that's the one thing I'm interested in. I want to hear what he says about me on Tough, because I think I saw where he mentioned it, and he's no-selling me. So I'm interested to see what he says on Tough, and I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think that debuts May 3rd or May 2nd or something like that. So make sure to everyone watch that. Before we get into our International Fight Week suggestions here, you mentioned Seattle. I know like they had announced you being on the card against TBA. Didn't end up fighting. Were you disappointed that didn't work out? Like why ultimately didn't you fight in Seattle?
Well, I got home and it was going to be a lot. I mean, there was physically, I could just tell like my body's tired. I'm not injured. I made it out of the Max Griffin fight uninjured compared to the Tony Ferguson fight. I had, let me just restart this. Okay. Yeah. I was in a 6-month camp from June to December 7th, my birthday. I was in a 6-month camp. And along the way I had acquired injuries that had to be medically treated, had to be attended to. Some didn't, some things just kind of healed on their own. I made it out of the Max Griffin fight relatively unscathed. My body felt good. But once I took 10 days off and got back to training, I just didn't feel it. You know, I just felt like I felt like I needed a rest. I was still performing well in the gym, but I just felt like my body needed a break. And, you know, some things happened in my personal life, you know, as we're going through the process of figuring out an opponent, my dog of 10 years, I found her dead in my yard the day I was supposed to give my answer. And I think I just hit my breaking point in that moment. Was just like, I need to just take a step back. I mean, to me, it was like a sign. It was just like, dude, I can only gangbuster through turmoil and push myself so hard. I'm 37 years old. The last time I tried to fight 3 times in 6 months, I ruptured a disc in my back. And that was before I was supposed to fight Tony the first time. So it was the right decision. And once we made the choice to pull from the card, I still continued to train because it's my job. And I ended up having a really, really bad spasm in my back that took me out. So I think that I would have had to withdraw anyways. I'm fine now. It wasn't anything serious. I'm back to full training, obviously, because I went and did the Ultimate Fighter and all that. But I definitely, like, that day, just those two things. It was just like, okay, even if I push through losing my dog, I still would have had this happen. And I probably would have had to sit out for 10 days. And I probably wouldn't have been able to fight. So I made the right choice. So it's looking like early summer, late spring, somewhere along those lines. But I'm definitely itching to compete. I feel like I'm still hitting my stride. So competition is in the foreseeable future for me.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm sorry for your loss, man. That's very, very rough. I know. I mean, circumstance, I know it was already kind of a quick turnaround and, you know, like maybe you would have done if they found you a very perfect opponent or something, but yeah, just
even at that, it's like, I just like, I want the fights to mean something. Like, I don't want to have him just like, oh, we'll just find you a favorable matchup and throw you out there. It's like, nah, I'm too competitive for that. So yeah. I like meaningful fights, fights that make sense. But at the end of the day, man, I still, going to Seattle didn't sting. It still felt good to see the home crowd. And I think that for how much Seattle showed up for that event, I have high hopes that before I retire, they'll go back. And if they do go back, if I have a fight on the horizon, like I did this last time, I will tell Sean Shelby, you're either gonna have to pull my fight and move it, or I'm gonna pull out so I can fight in Seattle. Like, I have to do it one more time, win or lose, doesn't matter. I just want to make that walk at Climate Pledge.
Yeah, I mean, I think they broke the North American gate record for that fight night event. So I assume they'll be back at some point. I mean, they're just killing it right now. It
was
a very good
event. I don't know if you were there, but it was
rocking. I missed it, unfortunately. Yeah, I mean, crazy. It got dinged up a bit in those final days with some of the pullouts, but it's still ended up being pretty solid there. So I mentioned, man, like, speaking of high level fights, before we get into our list here, Sean Brady this past weekend beating Leon Edwards the way he did, obviously a former opponent of yours. What did you think of that performance from Sean? That was pretty impressive stuff.
Dude, Sean's a tremendous athlete. Incredibly skilled, incredibly strong. I mean, I could have warned Leon about that headed into that fight. You can't really make jokes about the short guy thing, because he said it best. I just watched one of his interviews, and I'm a fan of Sean. So, you know, when he fights, when he does interviews, I'm always tuning in. He's a great guy. I like all the Philly guys, to be honest with you. They're all kind of my people. And, you know, somebody should have warned Leon, like, this isn't just some short guy. You're not just going to lace this guy with a head kick. Like, you are going to have to deal with the strongest fighter you've ever faced in your life. There's no guy you could bring in to emulate like the strength of Sean Brady, because you'd have to find a guy that's like 210 pounds. Like, he's that strong. I remember the first time he locked his hands around my waist when we fought, I was just like, holy crap. Like, Felder totally was right. You are like, you have like mutant like strength. So I wasn't surprised. I think that Sean really turned a corner after that Bilal Muhammad fight. And you could just see, you know, when you saw him fight Bilal, you saw a lot more lateral movement. It looked like he was trying to be more technical on the feet, where I think that he turned a corner after Bilal and was just like, screw this. Like, I need to just walk these guys down with big punches, get them on their heels, get him on the mat, and get him into his wheelhouse. So he turned a corner after that Bilal fight. And I think that it's safe to say, like, you could argue that he could be the next guy to fight for the title. We'll see how everything shakes out. But we're seeing a big paradigm shift at 170 pounds. It's very, very exciting.
Obviously, I could talk about the welterweight division forever here, but who do you think, when you look forward, like, who's going to come out of this maybe this time next year is the champion? Because we got the title fight, then Shavkat's next, and then Sean Brady's there. If the belt changes hands, I could see Islam maybe moving up to welterweight if Bilal's no longer the champion. So, like, who do you think is the best guy who's going to emerge in the next 12 months here?
Man, you know, I do think Bilal beats JDM. I think that's a good fight for him. JDM, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful or dismissive of his skills, he's an incredible boxer. We've seen him have trouble in the past with the wrestling department. And Bilal is a pressure monster. Like, he's going to be in your face. He's very durable. And he's just, if JDM's got to be ready to defend the takedowns, not only defend the takedowns, defend the pressure. It's hard to come forward with boxing pressure when a guy is going to mash you with wrestling. And Bilal does a good job mixing up the wrestling with the striking to keep his opponents guessing. So I see Bilal winning that fight. Now, this time next year is going to be very interesting, because I do think the tougher matchups for Bilal are on the horizon. I think Sean Brady, if they fought again, I think he's a different fighter. His style similar to Bilal's in terms of the pressure and the wrestling now, but he's just got that edge with the submissions. I don't know how that fight goes. I think it'll be a different fight. But I do, you got Shavkat, the boogeyman, waiting in the wings. And he did look a lot more human against Ian Garry. But as once the fight unfolded, we found out, you know, he went into that fight with a knee injury. Yeah. Islam going up could really shake things up. I'm not sure. I mean, if Shavkat wins the title, I think, I don't know how Islam fares against him. But if I had to pick of the bunch, I think I'm just going to stick with Bilal Muhammad, because I think people just doubt him so much. And I would like to think that he beats JDM. I would like to think that he could beat Sean Brady again. And that's going to be, I think that's the toughest of the fights for Bilal, would be a fight with Sean Brady. But I just pick him Bilal, because I'm done picking against the guy. I think he's incredible. And it would be of no surprise to me if he's still holding the title this time next year.
Yeah, I would love to see how the people are talking about him if he wins all those fights in a row. And just like, you know, his unbeaten streak would be like 16, 17 then. Would just love to know what his haters say at that point. But nevertheless.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I've never been a Bilal hater by any means. I think he's a great guy. But like, you look at the guys he's fought, like I thought Burns was going to get the best of him. I thought Leon would get the best of him just because of the first fight, you know. So while I like Bilal on a personal level, sometimes you have to put your friendships aside, put your analyst hat on, and make some hard choices, you know.
Definitely.
And I picked against him. But now it's at this point, it's like, no, he's here for a reason. He's a very cerebral fighter. I think he can find a way to beat these guys.
Yeah, and I love the reaction of the opponents after he wins. Like, you got Leon saying he would beat him 9 out of 10 times, even though they had fought twice and he hadn't won yet. And Sean said he beats him 9 out of 10 times. I guess he'll have the chance to prove that if they rematch. But yeah, there's something, I don't know, something about this guy when he beats you. It's hard for the people to, I guess, accept it in full or something. I don't know.
I think it's just, I don't like when guys say that. It's like, I could have said the same thing with Sean Brady. If I had 10 more seconds, I would have beat you though to win that fight. It's like, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't move through the rest of your career thinking like that, or it's just going to hold yourself back. You know, you're just going to dwell on the past. I win that fight 9 out of 10 times. Well, who cares? You lost it the one time. That's the only time that matters. So why even make comments like that?
No one fights 10 times in MMA anyways. So like,
I've said things like that in the past, but it's like, I'm 37 years old. I've been in the sport for, 17 years at this point. Like, it's just kind of a distasteful thing to say.
For sure. All right, well, let's stop looking at the past here, Mike, and look ahead to the future here. As I said off the top, it's pretty much 3 months this week from International Fight Week. We know every year that is the big circle on the UFC's calendar. They like to blow it out. I think in recent years, like as we were talking about coming up with main event suggestions for this card, UFC 317 on June 28th, International Fight Week for the past like 10 years has not been kind to the UFC. There's been injuries, there's been unfortunate situations, like fights not coming together with the timing. And I don't think it's like, usually you know this, you've been around forever, like most of the UFC product that we see is not plan A. Like their plan A rarely comes together. It's usually plan B, C, D, or whatever the case may be. So I don't know. Yeah. We're here. Like, we know the sport well. We know who's available, who's booked around. He could maybe make turnarounds. So I don't know. We don't have anything locked in, but let's try to make this, I guess, as big as possible with what we got available here. So I guess I'll give you the floor first. I guess before we get into it, I came up with almost like two different lists, like one kind of the realistic list and one maybe the crazy list where a lot of stuff would have to come together here. I know you somewhat did the same here, so we may not keep it at five, we may go beyond, but as far as like realistic options, if you said right here, what do you think will be the main event of UFC 317, what was at the top of your list?
Okay, so first and foremost, the fight that we all want is obviously Aspinall Jones. That's just like the no-brainer. But John Jones is on his own timeline, so for me, I'm actually going to leave that fight out. It's just like, that's the one we want, but the reality is I just don't know if that's the fight we're going to get. And that's the one that's just the most obvious. So I'm not going to take away one of my five fights I put together to bring up Aspinall Jones. Like, let's just say this. That's the champion of this list. Okay, yes. So we're just going to go over the five contenders below that. So I'm going to start with one that makes sense timeline-wise. And obviously it would depend on if this person could get a visa into the USA or not. But I think that Dricus du Plessis and Khamzat Chimaev is a very, very worthy fight of International Fight Week. Obviously, Chimaev in the past has had issues with injuries, withdrawals. He hasn't fought in the United States in a while. I don't know if there's any reason for that, but I think that that's right off the top of my head. That's the best fight you could put together with guys that are available. We don't have to wait for any type of variables with he's got to get past this person or that person. I just think that for me, that's a logical fight that sticks out to me.
Yeah, that was number one on my list as well. I do think it is realistic. I think it's being discussed, and I would not be surprised at all to see that fight on that card either as the main or maybe the co-main if we get into things that they want to really go crazy. But yeah, like that is one of the biggest fights I think the UFC can make right now. It's so exciting. And you know, I think with the change in government leadership in the United States, it might be easier for Khamzat to get whatever potential issues are lingering figured out. So man, like that's such a big fight. I really can't wait. And Dricus, I think, deserves that type of opportunity, right? Like we know with the way the schedule gets laid out, there's the marquee tentpole events, the Miami's, Vegas, but someone's got a headline Toronto and Sydney and like these places where the card might not be as stacked and all that stuff. He's found himself in that role so far. So not the greatest undercards either as someone like, you know, trying to get pay-per-view points. So I'd love to see him like on something like this with a huge card where he can get his big payday with a huge challenger as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. Daniel Rubenstein would love that as well.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
He's agent. So that's the most logical one for me. So I'll throw out another one. And this one involves Dricus du Plessis again. This one's a little more on the fun side, a little more, something would have to work in his, into the other athlete's favor.
Yep.
DDP versus Alex Pereira. But obviously because Alex lost the title, he would have to go down. So this would be a middleweight fight, Dricus du Plessis versus Alex. Now, could Alex make 185 pounds again? I really, really doubt it. But it's just one of those things, like you said, we could get a little crazy with this. Like,
yeah,
there's a big maybe, you know, maybe, you know, you come to Alex with the right amount of money. You got 3 months time. You know, he might be able to pull off the drop down to 185 pounds. So that's my second one. I think that for me, I would like to see Dricus in this spot. So that's why I have him at the top of the list in those top two fights. Because like you said, he's had to pull the weight for a lot of cards. I think he deserves to headline a big card where he's going to get pay-per-view points. And there's no bigger guy to get him those pay-per-view points than Khamzat Chimaev and Alex Pereira.
Yeah, I had that one on my fun list as well. That makes a ton of sense. It's just a question of could Alex make that weight safely, but there's the built-in storyline there. Alex was just in the corner of Sean Strickland when he fought against, when that fight happened against Dricus. So yeah, man, I'd love to see that one. Just don't know about the weight, but I think if you're trying to blow that out, I mean, who better to have Alex Pereira in there? I guess, I don't know, if you were Alex and his team and they put both fights on the table and said you could have a title shot against Dricus at 185 or the rematch with Alex at 205, what are you taking?
Well, for him, I mean, it's obvious. You take the fight with Magomed, because allegedly he went into that fight sick with a broken hand, but we kind of hear that all the time, same old song and dance
let's address that a little bit. I mean, I don't know, I had heard, full disclosure, like two fighters pulled out of that card with norovirus. I'd heard maybe he got that. I don't know about the broken hand thing. I guess maybe it would make sense given how little he was throwing his punches, but there's also the takedown element. I don't know. Like, I don't know how much to make of that. I've never had norovirus, but from what I hear, it's like almost debilitating. So to think he fought five rounds of that is also, I don't know.
And he is the type of guy to not withdraw on fight day or fight
week. Well, especially on a card like that. I mean, imagine how devastating that would have been.
Yeah. I mean, Alex is, to put it simply, he's a fighter's fighter. He'll step up on short notice. I could see him being the guy that doesn't matter if he's sick, broken hand. I mean, he went into the Jamal Hill fight, I believe it was, with a broken foot.
Yeah.
So I could see that being a reality, but it's just something you hear so often. But there's only way to find out if there's any truth to that is you just have them fight again. So, you know, if it's on the timeline of International Fight Week and you have the two options, if I'm Alex, I'm taking the not the easier fight, but the easier fight camp. You know, that those camps to 185, I'm sure, are not a lot of fun. So I would take the Magomed fight over the Dricus du Plessis fight.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. And Dricus has even said he doesn't want to fight Alex at 185 because people are just going to say you're fighting a depleted skeleton out there, basically. Like, that's why he wanted to do that at 205. So,
well, he depleted skeleton at 185 pounds, to be honest. Yeah. He really does.
Yeah. So, I mean, you put those two on a poster, though, and Dricus will talk his shit. Like, that would be a huge fight that I think would do good numbers for the UFC. So, we will see what they do. But I do like that we're highlighting Dricus du Plessis here. I think he's a very good candidate to headline this card. Okay, I'll give you one of mine now. Yeah. I had the ones that we've mentioned off the top of the on my top of the list as well. I had Merab Dvalishvili versus Sean O'Malley too, bantamweight title rematch. Here that could maybe happen in early June as opposed to late June, but I think, you know, Sean O'Malley, having him headline International Fight Week, that's, you know, easy stuff in terms of the name value. That's someone who you could put on that marquee. So I thought that made sense.
Yeah, that fight makes a lot of sense. And that also is on my list of just logical fights you can make, timeline-wise, availability. You have to take those things into account when we're talking what could potentially headline International Fight Week. Yeah, that's a no-brainer. But I do have a fun one that involves Merab. Okay, so I agree with you on this one. That's number three on my list. But I have another. This is on my fun list.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Merab versus Pantoja at 125 pounds.
I have that on my fun list as well.
Yes, dude. Because
you wait, at 120, like, at 125 pounds.
Yes, because
oh shit, okay, I had at 135 on my list.
No, I had heard rumblings that Merab could make. He believes he could make 125 pounds.
Yeah, he now, was saying that while Aljo was the champion.
And the one thing I will say though is I know that Merab makes his weight cuts very hard on himself. Like, he does not take the easy route during fight week. Everything Rob does, he takes the hard route. But with that being said, I do think that he can make 125 pounds. And that's the fight that Pantoja needs to put him over. Like, you got to put Pantoja in a marquee fight. Like, we all know how talent-rich flyweight is. Flyweight, to me, flyweight and bantamweight are the two most talent-rich divisions in the UFC right now, from top to bottom, from the champion down to the lowest-ranked guy. The lighter you are, the more skilled you have to be in the sport. But I think that would give Merab that opportunity to chase two titles, because it seems like that's what a lot of champions want to do. And that gives Pantoja the opportunity for a big marquee win, a big marquee fight that doesn't involve Brandon Moreno. So that's, to me, I think that would be a fun one to have him chase the double champ status. And I think it'd be a lot of fun. I think it'd be a fun fight. I think that Pantoja has a lot to offer Merab Dvalishvili. I don't think there's a huge size discrepancy between the two guys. And it would be fun to see Merab's wrestling style take on Pantoja and his grappling, because Pantoja has shown he is one of the best jiu-jitsu players in the UFC.
Kind of blowing my mind now, because like I said, I put this down on my list, but at 35, I wanted to give Pantoja the chance to be the double champ there, given like everything he's done, probably the more cleared out division. I don't know, do you not like that idea as much if it was Pantoja coming up, or would you take it either way?
I mean, I would take it either way if I was Pantoja, but you know, that's where I think that if Merab comes down to 125, they're going to be more the same size. But if Pantoja, it takes time to put on weight. So I just don't know if that timeline would make sense for Pantoja, because I've gone up a weight class in my career, and it's not just a matter of like, oh, I can just do the same things I'm doing and just eat a little more. It's like, no, you got to put on some muscle. You got to put on some size. You got to spend time preparing with bigger bodies to get ready for the people in a bigger weight class. So if I'm Pantoja, I'm taking the fight at 125 pounds. And Merab's in Las Vegas at the PI with the greatest nutrition staff in the business, so they could take him down to 125 pounds safely.
Well, that was a perfect segue there, talking about, you know, bulking up the right way. I'm surprised this has taken so long to come up here, but I will throw it out. Islam Makhachev versus Ilia Topuria is one that is obviously very clear and very realistic potentially. I don't know if Ilya is going to get the shot, but I don't know. This man's out here today doing his media. He changed his nickname to The Legend. I don't know if you saw that. It's whatever in Spanish translates to The Legend.
Probably sounds a lot cooler than Legend, I'm going to guess, because I think
yes, probably. I'm not going to even try to say it in Spanish right now. I don't want to embarrass myself. But yeah, man, I mean, I don't know. What's your take on this? Like, is this the fight we're going to get? Should Ilya get an immediate title shot at lightweight? And should they make this fight for International Fight Week? Timing seems perfect for everyone. It's right there if they want to do it.
The timing seems absolutely perfect. And you have to think, like, when you have champions like Islam Makhachev, you want to save him for marquee, for specific markets. So obviously you want to keep him for Abu Dhabi. But Magomed Ankalaev just won the title. It sounds like they want to do the rematch in Abu Dhabi. So that frees up Islam to fight stateside, International Fight Week. Plenty of time for him to make weight. And for Ilia Topuria, I think that this is the timeline that he wants. And, you know, you could make the argument that he doesn't deserve the title fight because of Arman Tsarukyan. You know, and I still believe Arman Tsarukyan is the clear number one contender in that weight class. It's a shame we didn't get to see that fight, because that's an incredible fight. Mm-hmm. Islam and Arman. But I think that for International Fight Week, you want to put together the most marquee matchup you can. While I do think that it should be Arman fighting for the title next, if we're talking about International Fight Week in the headliner, that's not the fight to make. The fight to make is absolutely Islam versus Ilya headlining International Fight Week. That would be a huge, huge fight. And I have another fight with Ilya that's on the fun list. And I'm sure, Mike, you have the same one as me.
Oh, let's see.
Could you imagine Ilia Topuria versus Conor McGregor? To me, like when he put out the tweet, like the mysterious tweet about the big news, you're never going to see it coming. Like, okay, I could see Islam. I could see that one coming. That one's obvious. Mm-hmm. But when you say that, oh, you're never going to see this one coming, that's immediately where my mind went. And could you imagine the level of superstardom that he would achieve if he fought Conor McGregor and beat him? It's a level that we've never even seen before. I mean, people don't realize here in America how big of a superstar he is. But in Spain, this guy, for him to walk out on the field at a Real Madrid game, you know, he is so nationally recognized in Spain and in Georgia as well. In Europe, he is an absolute superstar. It's just, I just don't think the people in America have quite seen it yet. But
no, they haven't.
He goes out and fights Conor and beats him. You are going to achieve a level of global superstardom that we have never seen before. And for Conor, if he can turn Ilya around, that's you want to talk about a resurgence in your career. So that's more on the fun list. I don't know if we're ever going to see Conor McGregor fight again, but I like the idea of an Ilya Topuria Conor McGregor fight.
Yeah, I mean, if you're trying to make whatever is left of Conor's star power and maximize it and transfer it to someone else, that is the fight to make. But yeah, it's just a question of, could you get him on to fight? And on my fun list, I just had Conor McGregor versus anyone, basically, because we know that would do good business. But like if you're the UFC and he called you and said, I want to go in June, International Fight Week, are you being like, we just did this last year and it did not work out and caused us like the biggest headache in the world? I mean, I guess if he's ready, you got to book them and, you know, go forward with that. But I'm sure someone would have a little worry in the back of their mind doing that.
Well, it's the same worry you'd have with like Chimaev. You know, Chimaev's had issues. You know, the guy trains so hard that he runs himself into the dirt, runs into injuries, things of that sort. And for Conor, I mean, a lot of people gave him a lot of flack because it was just a broken toe. But it's like, you know, we got to remember this guy has stepped up so many times with injuries and been a company man, essentially. It's just smart for him this one time. Like, maybe I shouldn't do this, given the stakes of, you know, him coming back after a terrible career-ending injury. I don't blame him for withdrawing from having the broken toe. People don't know what it's like to be in his position. So, but I think if Conor McGregor's ready and available, I mean, you got to throw him in there with somebody.
Yeah. Do you think Ilya is the biggest Conor McGregor fight that could happen in the sport right now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you could get, if you brought Nate Diaz back and did the trilogy, I think that would pull a lot of big numbers because there's so much history there. That'd be such an easy fight to promote.
And I think people would think Conor could actually win too. I don't think they're confident in his ability to maybe beat someone like Ilya.
Yeah. I mean, that's, and who, I mean, look at Ilya in his style. I mean, it's tailored to beat a guy like Conor. Mm-hmm. And it just, I think that he's hungrier than Conor is. I think it's, and I'm not saying this in a disrespectful way. I mean, Conor's done so many phenomenal things in the sport. The guy's a billionaire, you know, it's like he doesn't have to fight anymore. So to draw that kind of motivation to go fight a guy like Ilya Topuria, I think that's more challenging than the fight itself. But I mean, could you just imagine how big that fight would be? It would be incredible.
It'd be massive. Yeah. Okay. I'll circle back to Islam. I didn't have any other Ilya fights, but I think those are two very good options. If it gets to the situation where, like, back to the realistic side of things here, like where they just need a main event, you could do Islam versus any of those lightweights. You could do Justin Gaethje, you could do Charles Oliveira, you could do Armin Sarukian. So any of those, but my crazy off the wall, never going to happen one with Islam Makhachev and someone we mentioned earlier, Islam goes to 185 and fights Dricus du Plessis there, as he had mentioned back in January. Like, the never going to happen one. But if they want to do something completely crazy, like, you got to watch this fight, two champions on the poster. That's the insane one you do, but never going to happen.
No, never going to. I mean, listen, man, like, I know, I hear the stories of how good Islam is and how strong he is, but like, if you ever meet Dricus du Plessis and take one look at him, he's a gorilla. He's a monster. Like, that's, at some point, size and strength will supersede technique. That would be a very, very uphill battle for Islam, to say the least. But I mean, hey, we're throwing things at the wall that sound crazy. What if it sticks? You never know. It wouldn't be the craziest thing that ever happened in the UFC, but I think that's one of those situations where you maybe save Islam from himself.
Yes,
and that confidence, but
People would eat that shit up, though. Like, seeing the discrepancy in their size and everything. I mean, I just see the traffic numbers on Yoel Romero fighting dirty boxing or whatever against some, like, 6'7" dude that no one's ever heard of. But it's just, like, fascinating to look at, even though it was the worst fight. So, I mean, that's partially what the sport was built on in Japan, is, like, these freak show fights with massive size discrepancies. So, don't think we're seeing that at the highest level, but there you go.
No, and, you know, the story of David and Goliath has stood the test of time. Everybody loves to see the small and mighty versus the big giants. You know, it's a fascinating storyline, and sometimes it pans out to where the little guy wins. I just don't know if this is the situation where that would hold true.
For sure. Okay, I'm running thin on my list here. I just had Megabed Ankalaev versus Alex Pereira too, if they wanted to do that. I'm not sure if we touched on that. If Pereira isn't available and they really needed something, I guess you could do Ankalaev versus Yuri Prohazka. I think that would be the next option at light heavyweight. But I think this is getting to the point where, like we were kind of last year, where if we're a month out and don't have a main event, maybe these are some of the calls they start making. But I assume they would want some of these higher up fights. I have one more off the wall, or a couple more off the wall ones, but I'll throw it back to you. Is there any other?
I have one last realistic one. Okay. And it's a stretch in terms of being a reality, but I think it's something that they could realistically put together. Let's say we can't get John Jones. Okay. It's just not working for John's timeline. But Aspinall's adamant about fighting International Fight Week. Why not just do him and Alex? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really, Alex is that guy that would be ready and willing to step up. He has talked about wanting to fight at heavyweight. And that's a fight. I mean, if you are in Tom Aspinall's shoes, obviously you want to chase John Jones. You want to win the undisputed title. And a lot of people have him pegged as the undisputed champion because he seems to be in the driver's seat in terms of being the leader of the weight class. Why not just fight Alex? For A, it's a very winnable fight for you, and B, it's going to pull a lot of numbers. You're going to make a ton of money. And at that point, you could really, if Tom Aspinall fights at International Fight Week, you are going to force John Jones's hand in terms of, or force the UFC's hand in terms of stripping Jones of the title and making Aspinall the undisputed champion. Now, will Aspinall accept that? Probably not, because he's such a competitor. I think that he wants to fight John Jones to solidify himself as the true champion at heavyweight. But you put him in there with Alex, it's a huge marquee fight. It's going to draw a ton of buzz. It's going to draw a lot of pay-per-view buys, and it's going to force John's hand down the road. If Aspinall fights anybody, it's going to force John's hand. But I think that the fight with Alex would be a very, very fun fight for a headliner for International Fight Week.
I like that one a lot, especially if it gets, as you said, all those circumstances played out. Hopefully not. I mean, I really want to see Jones versus Aspinall. I know we kind of pushed it to the side at the beginning because it was such an obvious one for this list. But from what you've seen in the past couple of days, like Dana doing those interviews in London saying like it's done, but it's not done. Like we still need signatures. Then Tom holding up the duck in the crowd. And then he did some interviews on Monday kind of saying he had a very, very productive meeting with Hunter Campbell, and he's just being careful what he says and not trying to rock the boat. But I don't know, like when these things you're seeing in public, does this feel like we're on, I guess, like the 1 yard line here and almost about ready to get this thing done?
I mean, I think we're on the 1 yard line with Tom Aspinall. I just don't know if it's Jones. I mean, it's like, did Dana specifically say, yes, we have Tom Aspinall versus John Jones done. We're just waiting on signatures. It just sounds more like we got something done for Tom, you know? So yeah. I hope it's Jones. I mean, that's the fight that has to happen. But it's just hard for me to believe that. John fights on his own timeline. John is on his own schedule. John Jones strictly has the reins on his business, you know? So, we'll see. You know, I have a feeling they have something for Aspinall for sure. I just don't know if it involves John Jones. I can't say that confidently. I haven't heard any inside rumblings. And if the deal was done, they would really play their cards close to their chest, because you know they would really want to do a big announcement for this fight.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll see what happens. Things are moving, I think, one way or another. So I think we'll get answers in the next few weeks here. Okay, a couple more in my off-the-wall random list that I had. Had Alexander Volkanovski versus Patricio Pitbull. If they both win at UFC 314 and like they need something and want a quick turnaround, both those guys are open to being active, so maybe we get that. I put Israel Adesanya versus Alex Pereira 3 in MMA. Don't know which weight it would be, but I don't think anyone drew that up in them fighting in a non-title fight in 2025, but you know, they got the names, they could carry a card like that if you had to go the route of a non-title fight. Put down the BMF title, like anything involving that. If it gets really desperate, maybe you go Max Holloway, Charles Oliveira, that could carry a card.
Yeah, that was the one I was going to say. That was and that's like, the BMF title, it's a thing now. I mean, and it's like, you have to acknowledge it for what it is. It's not a true champion of a weight class, but like, look, dude, we don't have to adhere to other sports. Like it's a title that we made. That the first time we made it, I was like, this makes no sense. It's just a one-off. And then now it's like, but is it really? Because now the fight actually means something. These fights have been special for this BMF title. And if you put Charles Oliveira in there with Max Holloway, that is going to deliver. That is going to be a very, very fun fight. And it's like you put Max or Charles in any main event, people are tuning in. They're two of the most beloved fighters for their personality, their style, what they bring to the octagon. Both of them have huge fan bases. Hawaii versus Brazil inside T-Mobile. I mean, that would be massive. I think that's a fight that could be more of a reality than people honestly would think it is. So that's a phenomenal fight.
Yeah, maybe take it off the crazy list and put it on the realistic then. But
that's kind of what I'm thinking. And even if it's not the main event, throw it on there anyways. Like, and when you have these big fights, I think the UFC has learned these big events, you have to have two title fights, because if the main event falls out, you got to have one to bump up into that spot. And that could take that main event spot for sure.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, here's my last one on the topic of BMF, but a women's BMF. Ooh. Mike.
Yeah.
Amanda Nunes comes out of retirement and fights fellow former teammate Kayla Harrison for the inaugural women's BMF title. Don't think it's going to happen. I want to see your good friend Juliana and Kayla do the right title fight, hopefully sooner than later. But for some reason, if Amanda Nunes is like, I want to come back, but I don't want to fight Juliana Pena for the title, this is the fight to make, I think. And you could throw a women's BMF on there. I just wanted to give the ladies some love since we didn't mention any.
Yeah, absolutely. And do the fight at 145 pounds. Bring back the featherweight title, and that gives Amanda the opportunity, you know, to solidify herself in both weight classes. And you would think with Kayla Harrison coming to the UFC, you would think that they would open up that division again, because it's seeing her make 135 pounds is pretty scary, dude. She looks I can't imagine what that process is like. And then another realistic fight that we didn't really throw out there, I would love to see Valentina versus Zhang Weili. I think that's a great fight. Is it a main event worthy fight for International Fight Week? Probably not. But like I said, you put that in that co-main event spot just in case something goes south with the main event, and you shift them up and give them the push. And I think that'd be a huge fight for women's MMA as well.
Yeah, I like that too. We'll see what happens in Montreal if Valentina can keep that belt against Manon. Okay, I think this was a very exciting thought process. What would you say, like on a scale of 1 to 10, is it going to be one of these fights we mentioned somewhere in there? Your confidence?
I don't see how it's not.
If it isn't, I don't know what the hell it's going to be. So.
Yeah, there's really nothing else they could do that's outside of that. So I think that one of these fights that we brought up, and obviously you and I see eye to eye on a lot of these potential matchups. I have a full one to 10. I got a 10. We're going to see one of these fights happen. Maybe even a handful of them. We might see two or three of these fights. A lot of them seem very realistic. So I guess we just got to sit back and wait over the next 4 weeks. I don't think they'll start announcing fights until it's about 8 weeks out.
Yeah. Well, one fight that it won't be is the Ultimate Fighter coaches, Daniel Cormier versus Chael Sonnen. So too bad. So sad on that front. But we'll be able to watch you on the show premiering in a few weeks here, Mike. Appreciate you so much for being back here on the show, and looking forward to seeing you continue to do your great desk work. What's your next one for you?
Man, I got quite a schedule ahead of me. I'm going to work April 5th at the Apex. I'm going to work BFL up in Canada, Battlefield Fight League. Shout out to my boy, Jay Gorshani. He's got a great promotion up there. One of his champions is on the Ultimate Fighter, Rodrigo Cinzanando. And then I got the desk for Iowa. I got the desk at the end of May. Figuring out what I'm doing. And I think I'm doing Atlanta in June. I don't know. I got a lot of stuff coming up. And then I got some big stuff coming up at the end of the summer. I don't know if I'm supposed to say anything, so I'm not going to. But I'm really excited for the summer. It's specifically like around September. So we'll see what happens.
Hell yeah. Okay. Well, we'll have you back on the show sometime around then, and we can all talk about it a little more in depth there. But I hope everyone liked our suggestions for International Fight Week. We'll see what happens. I'm going to take a quick break to wrap things up. Thanks again, Mike. Make sure everyone follows this man on all social medias, and I'll be right back to wrap up the show. And that does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much to Michael for his time. A little bit of a Mike and Mike action here on the Bonfire. I thought that was a lot of fun. Let me know in the comments which fight is most likely to headline International Fight Week. Did we miss something? Did we overlook an option? Or do you think it's going to be one of the suggestions? Make sure you let us know your thoughts in the comments. And while you're there, give a subscription, give a like, give a follow, whatever platform you are on. It is greatly appreciated support as we continue to build things here on the Bonfire. But that does it for this week. We will be back here next week on the show. Have a fun idea in mind as we wrap up Q1 of the UFC schedule. Enjoy UFC Mexico this weekend. Didn't touch on it much. Not the greatest card in the world, but an intriguing flyweight main event between Brandon Moreno and Steve Ursig. Everyone, have fun watching that. Enjoy the fights, and we'll see you back here next week at the Bonfire.